Welcome back to a special weekend edition of Black Friends Dinner. It's me, your host, Nandi K, your Black non-binary bae, and I'm here coming to you straight from LA. Ow, a bitch got bars now. Woo! I'm unstoppable. This is the last episode of our first season. Thank you to everyone who's listened and supported so far. Big thank you to all my guests. Next time we talk to each other, I'll be coming at you from sunny Los Angeles with a whole round table of wonderful guests. So I'm excited for you to join us on our next journey, and I hope you enjoy this special weekend edition about the black body of Black Friends Dinner. This week, Danny Moore and Tandika Fable pulled up a seat to the table to talk about all things black body. From politics to politicians, we chat over the difference between a blue wave and a blue ripple and what impacts, if any, it'll have on black folks. Let's see what happened this week in white history.
So, like, what does it mean that people like Bernie Sanders are saying white people who are not necessarily racist were uncomfortable voting for a black candidate? So this is someone who I had a lot of white friends tell me I should vote for because no one else cares about black people. And I was like, Bernie Sanders doesn't care about black people, right, though. What does the results of, like, not a blue wave, but a blue ripple, also mixed with some plan to impeach the president, that's all they're talking about, what does it mean for black people? Has anything changed for us?
Imagine it like war. Like, the blue side took two steps forward, but the red side just got a wave of reinforcements.
Right.
So are we prepared to fight that, like, conservative, I just want to openly not like black people and that's okay? We're not ready to fight that right now.
I think it's too soon to really tell of any type of difference. I feel like those that did notice, we got the seat in the Senate, but I feel like everyone that's legit that voted red is just going to come in and just be full of anger. They're not even going to sugarcoat anything they have to say, anything they have to do. They feel that what they are doing, they're owed it.
Oh, Bernie. Fast forward to present day, and he's saying he does not know what reparations will help. I never felt the burn. Seems like just yesterday a white liberal was telling me to vote for him because he was the only person who cared. Sounds a lot like take what you can get, nigger. And speaking of white history, we had a chance to chat over the social media phenomenon that is nigger fishing, or more commonly called black fishing, where white girls do everything in their beauty product power to look black.
The issue with black fishing or Kim Kardashian syndrome is that you can't just come out and say, I love black people and I'm envious of these attributes that they have naturally. Mm-hmm. You can't celebrate it with us.
Right.
So you try to steal it and make it your own. These, like, little bun shits people are doing, you mean Bantu knots?
Oh, that made me so mad. Somebody actually, because I wear Bantu knots whenever I wash my hair. Like how I let it dry, right? So it can be curly. Exactly. And so someone was like, oh, you have the little cinnamon buns. I was like, excuse
what?
Me? And they were attributing it to Miley Cyrus.
Goodbye.
First of all, I'm black. I just was so upset. Like, don't ever attribute my amazing hair to some white bitch. Like, that's literally impossible.
Popular culture is black culture. Yes. You just can't call it that because then white people will be upset.
But the things that they do call black culture, like,
all these little white things I've been doing in the shoot, that spent all night practicing.
They
this
changed
shit in
the Harlem Shake. Like, for me, that was when it was all over. I'm sorry.
Because the fact is that the world knows that black is beautiful, but we can't attribute it to black people because they're not people.
Right.
We can't give it to them. Girl, so we're going to take all of the things that we love. I'm going to take this shit back to slavery. I read this. I didn't see
Kardashians. Hold on to your edges.
Chai, everybody want to be a nigga, but nobody want to be a nigga. It's okay to look like us, sound like us, wear braids like us, have a fat ass like us, but God forbid you born with it. Maybe it's Kardashian. I think it's time for a break. I got a word on my spirit. I don't know who this is for. Leave him, sis. Get that man out your house. Sage that man out your place. And then hit on my girl at Celestine's Roots to get you some waist beads to keep that man away and attract the love you really deserve. Celestine's Roots focuses on creating waist beads that promote healing for women through self-love and self-care. It's through these methods that we're able to be our authentic selves and spread light throughout the world. Run on over to CelestinesRoots.com. Whew. From appearance to insecurities to agency over our own bodies and the world we live in, what does it really mean to walk around in a black body? Is there an acceptable way to be black? It's lusted after and it's feared, and sometimes it feels like there's nowhere for us to just be who we are. From the need to code switch to dealing with the police under any circumstances, niggas ain't even safe minding their business. After a short rib stew dinner, we came back to the table to really dig in.
So first, I kind of want to talk about agency, and I don't know if you guys have read Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, but that whole work is basically about the agency of the black body. And even what struck me the most was when he talks about why black parents beat their kids and how it's about, it's like a realization of the lack of agency that black people have on their body. So they feel like if I don't beat you, the police will. And that shit.
That's real.
Got me, right? Of like, we really live in like a state where black people are in constant fear of like losing their lives, possibly of being assaulted, being verbally attacked while they're minding their business, of having the police called on them.
But no, when I leave the house, I don't think about ever having an altercation with the police that is serious enough would like, result in my death. And it's because code switching. It is the biggest, best safety blanket you can have in this day and age. Yeah, and it's sad to say, but that's real. And I code switch beautifully. Mm-hmm. I work in hospitality. I get phones, y'all.
Hello.
Honey.
Sir, Mr. Offer, I didn't even realize that marijuana was illegal because I understood that it was decriminalized, and I'm so sincerely sorry.
I just didn't understand.
Right.
I don't want to disrespect you or your authority. I mean, I really have so much respect for what you do. I'd like to thank my mother and God.
Who's ahead of your life? I'm kind of like you, where like I smoke weed on the street. Mm. I'm not, like, nervous about having weed. I lived in Los Angeles. I have a L.A. ID still. So, really, I'm like, if something happens,
right,
I'll just be like, oh, I'm not from here.
Right.
And I would code switch, right? But also, I had, like, this whole altercation with my ex-girlfriend in 2015 where we were just, like, minding our own business. And this off-duty cop, like, beat the shit out of her. And the first, I thought they were going to kill her. Second, I was like, if they kill her, what's going to happen to me? Mm-hmm. And so that really super changed, like, how I feel about, like, the police and, like, how, like, safe I feel if I get into any. I try to avoid the police at all costs, like, especially after that. And it's still, like, this ongoing thing. So, like, yeah, I think I used to feel way, like, more like I'm not a target until, like, let's say, like, maybe I wasn't, you know, but, like, something still, like, happened that day. Right. And it definitely, like, changed, like, my approach. Even just, like, if I see a black person with a cop, like, in a subway station, if I can't, I'll stop and just, like, kind of stand there for a while so I can see what's going on, make sure it's nothing crazy. don't need nobody to like stand up. Are you okay? Like,
that's crazy in and of itself that that's necessary.
But it really is necessary.
It is necessary.
Yeah, I want to touch on that because I have a friend and he does that. It was several times that we went out and the cops were having like a interaction with a younger black kid or older black guy. He's like, hold up, I just want to stand here and record it. And I'm like, I don't think you need to do that. He was like, no, I definitely need to do that because you never know.
You don't.
And I think it was almost like the part of me that didn't want to believe that we've come to this place that we feel that in the street, complete strangers, that we have to stand guard to make sure that this person is protected because of how crazy and reckless these cops have
become. And also we've seen it not even work, you know, like we've seen videotapes that had zero
evidence, all that.
Zero consequences. Like we've seen videos of like police murdering people in cold blood and like going home to their families every day.
Botham Jing was just minding his business, not bothering nobody. He was in his house and he was shot to death by an off-duty police officer who later claimed, I thought it was my apartment. I thought he was an intruder. Girl. We see all these videos of cops murder people in cold blood and just go home to their families at night. To them, it's just a job, and our lives are just the cost of them doing that job. I know in the offices I spend my work days in, I often find myself being the only one, you know, the only black, the only gay, the only they, you know. So y'all already know the microaggressions are real, and exclusion is on super high. We talk a little bit about on-the-job encounters.
What's your job like, Danny?
I work in hospitality. I'm a reservationist. So I actually think that my blackness in my job is less important than my body. Because my body stands, like what you look like will stand in your way in hospitality more so
right.
than any other field.
I completely agree.
So you all can hear my voice because this is a podcast. And I have a good voice. This is what I sound like on the phone, I guess. And it's, this is a word I really like, mellifluous. I really like that word. That's kind of what my voice is. And it's things that sound
definitely
nice, things
sexy.
That are pleasing to the ear. And I think I have a nice, I have a little bit of a phone sex voice. I ain't mad at it.
Yes. Right. Yes, honey.
So what it means is that it allows people to keep me hidden because they can still use me. I'm also very organized and very smart and very talented. And that means that I never get to be at the door, right? So this job is the first job that I've had where they're more willing to put me at the door. But I'm at the door, and I don't really want to be at the door because we have to wear suits. And I'm not a suit person. That's not the lifestyle for me. But I have definitely worked in jobs like at our old job. They created a position, a salaried position that they promoted me to, but wouldn't let me be a maitre d'.
And
my job in the basement.
The same every week, though.
Listen, I'm not gonna front. That's how it was lit. I was grateful.
And being at the door is,
it's not great, but when you can't have it because someone doesn't think you were conventionally attractive enough, but you have every other skill set necessary to slay that shit. That to me is what gets me frustrated because it's like, all right, so you have your scrawny, stupid chick who's not doing anything for you or maximizing your income. But I'm looking at this from multiple perspectives because I have the privilege of having worked in it from a different end. And that value doesn't mean anything because it didn't come in a package.
Right.
Child, the Kardashians can serve curves, but God forbid a black woman do it. It's like that Tyra meme. It's like, have a fat ass, big titties, but be skinny and let me call you a hoe because you make my dick hard. Vulgar catcalling and Tinder messages that make you wish you would have swiped left.
Get
out. The way that people come at you on Tinder when you are even a little bit curvy.
Let me go on this thing.
Bonnie.
Wild.
Crazy. I don't have any curves, so.
The way that people talk to you on the street when you're a little bit curvy is wild. I have literally had people be like, yo, Ma, let me suck your titties. Walking down Broadway in broad daylight, and I'd be like,
my god, that is literally
that's forward, brazen. the unmitigated.
Literally
God.
Mouth hanging wide open. I cannot.
If you're cute enough, I might let you rock. And I'll be
It's the most wonderful time of the cast. It's time for my favorite dessert, white wine. It's a she bad moment in current events where white people are caught once again hating, calling the cops on us for breathing, or straight up giving a nigga a hard time. This week, white people up to their normal white people in. Mark Perry, a college economic professor at the University of Michigan in Flint, y'all, lodged a complaint with the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights against Wayne State University's summer workshop with Black Girls Code. He said that the workshop violates a Title IX, which is a law that prohibits discrimination based on sex for educational institutions that receive federal funds. Now, to make matters worse, this fool has filed 35 similar complaints against schools across the country. Man. White folks just can't catch a break. It's like everywhere you turn, a Black person is getting a much needed leg up. How dare they have a program for Black girls to code when the tech industry is 83% white? Well, I cackle in Black Femmes in Tech, and I encourage all my Black brothers and sisters to join me in a we all taking you crackers job mantra. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Black Friends Dinner. We're every other Thursday. This was a special weekend edition. And the next time you hear us, we will be joined by some new hosts in sunshiny LA. So we're super excited. Catch up on the rest of the episodes anywhere you stream your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. And you can also catch us on blackfriendsdinner.com. Black Friends Dinner is produced by myself, Nandi K, and Sean Dawson. And our theme music is by Leonidas.